Welcome to Go West Young Podcast, your show about the outdoors and America's public lands. I'm Aaron Weiss at the Center for Western Priorities in Denver. In just a minute, we will get a read on Ryan Zinke's first year at the Interior Department with someone who literally grew up there, New Mexico Senator Tom Udall. Plus, the deadliest mining accident in Montana history, this week in Western history. But first, let's do the news. Paleontologists announced an amazing find in southern Utah, what may be the densest area of Triassic-era fossils in the country, possibly in the entire world. Based on just a small excavation, they turned up three phytosaur skulls. They're related to crocodiles. The site had already been looted before the scientists got there, but they've already tracked down one skull fragment that had been poached. And here's the kicker. The spot where these fossils were found used to be inside Bears Ears National Monument. President Trump, of course, tried to remove monument protections when he shrunk that monument last year. So that means the area in question is now open to multiple use, including drilling and mining. And now there's no chance of extra staffing and patrols that a national monument would bring to ensure the safety of the site from future looting. And that's the reality of President Trump's attack on our national monuments. Our guest this week is a U.S. Senator and a former congressman and New Mexico Attorney General. He's also a member of what may be the best-known political family in the West, Senator Tom Udall. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Great to be with you today.
I want to start with Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke. This week marks 1 year since his confirmation. If you could boil down his first year to a single letter grade, what grade would you give him?
Well, I voted to confirm Secretary Zinke to give him a chance, and I don't know that I would boil it down to a letter grade at this point. He promised me he intended to run the Interior Department in the spirit of Teddy Roosevelt, but 1 year later, Teddy Roosevelt would be horrified by the actions of Secretary Zinke. Some of those actions that concern me a lot is his undermining of conservation, sidelining scientists, ignoring public advisory boards, and weakening protections for public lands. Let me give you a couple of my concerns here. The sham monuments review that led to the rollback of protections for national monuments, the reassignment of senior staff, and reorganization of the Interior Department, and the decision to shut out voices of the public, for example, the Bureau of Land Management's abrupt decision to weaken its oil and gas leasing review process, which will directly impact the region around Chaco Culture National Historic Park, where Navajo chapter houses have protested oil and gas leasing.
I want to ask about that Chaco situation specifically, because that was something that you asked the secretary about nearly a year ago next week during a Senate hearing. Obviously, you mentioned that's an incredibly important area to the tribes in New Mexico. During that hearing, I'm just going to set up this question that you asked him. You pointed to a first-of-its-kind joint effort that the Obama administration had started to ensure collaboration between the Bureau of Land Management and the Bureau of Indian Affairs at Chaco so that everyone was in the loop around future drilling plans. So I want to play this for folks first so they can hear the secretary's answer.
Will you ensure this ongoing joint effort between BIA and BLM continues so that we strike a balance between adequately protecting Chaco and allow for responsible development, and above all, ensure the tribes are intimately involved in the process, thus minimizing the potential for future disagreement?
Well, thank you for your question, and it strikes at the heart of it is consultation, which was mentioned before. Is the consultation has been inconsistent at best. So across the continuum of Interior, we have to make sure we have a policy in place. So consultation, the definition of consultation, and between our different departments, in some cases, we have not worked well between BLM or Fish and Wildlife or National Parks, and it's been inconsistent on our consultation process. So I'll commit to work together and continue that, but we have to also continue to improve what the consultation is. And so there's an expectation among peers as you enter the consultation processes to make sure that we've set the right and left flank. We know what the expectation is, and so the consultations are meaningful at the end of the process.
So, Senator, do you think that the Secretary has lived up to that promise on consultation?
No, I don't. I'm very concerned about this. What has happened, as you know, Aaron, is that the Bureau of Land Management made an abrupt decision to weaken its oil and gas leasing review process. The BLM shut out public comments and accelerated potential leases to oil and gas companies, including around Chaco. The changes reduced the amount of time for public comment on proposed development. Local communities, pueblos, and tribes should have a say when development is proposed in their backyards or near sacred or culturally sensitive land. The BLM's announcement also threatens to undermine the BLM and BIA's unique partnership there. They are working together on the first ever joint resource management plan. This move completely undercuts the spirit of openness, consultation, and communication that we have carefully worked to cultivate at Chaco. It's also unacceptable that the BLM appears to be eliminating the 10-mile buffer zone surrounding Chaco Canyon that has been put in place to provide a basic level of protection for the land. I will be calling on Secretary Zinke to reaffirm his previous commitment to me to move forward with the BLM and BIA's cooperative, consultative approach to manage this land.
So that lease sale is just over a week away now. Do you think there's any chance BLM or the Secretary pulls the plug or delays it? Or do you think it's just going forward at this point?
It looks like it's going forward to me, which is very disappointing.
I want to go back to the National Monuments Review, which you mentioned. Secretary Zinke recommended management changes, but not boundary changes, at both Organ Mountains Desert Peaks and Rio Grande del Norte in New Mexico. Did he consult with you either before or after making those recommendations?
Yeah, yes, he did. But then what followed up was very different from what I thought was going to happen. We understand from the administration they have more announcements in terms of the monuments, but the ball's really in President Trump's court. Fortunately, the only changes they have discussed regarding Organ Mountains, Desert Peaks, and Rio Grande del Norte have been management changes. And so we are relatively happy they haven't touched the boundaries, but at this point, we want them to do is consult with us and listen to the groups, and there's very, very strong local support for these monuments in New Mexico.
You mentioned that there may be other changes to other monuments coming down the pipe. Any sense of what those are?
No. Well, you can look at the original document that the president sent out of the White House, the proclamation, and you can get a sense. But this White House has been so unpredictable, and they announce one thing, and then within a matter of days, the secretary or the White House change their mind. And so it's very hard to tell where they're headed. At this point, if they kept on the course they were on for the New Mexico monuments, we're talking about some kind of management changes, but not boundary changes. And I've told the secretary that we'd like to have a discussion with him before he moves forward with those, and we don't know whether that'll happen or not. But we're very discouraged with the lack of consultation here.
What about the two monuments where President Trump is attempting to change the boundaries, Bears Ears, Grand Staircase, Escalante? Is there anything to be done on the congressional front while the legal challenges play out in court?
You bet there is. We have, first of all, I think on the legal front, they're in a strong position. The Antiquities Act is a law. That's the act that he acted under. Is an affirmative act. A president puts in place a monument. It's then up to Congress to change the monument. And so they have interpreted the Antiquities Act in the improper way. And so I think they're going to find themselves in trouble in court. But what we're doing is we have introduced the Antiquities Act of 2018 to move forward with the protection of all the areas where the president was degrading, changing the status, trying to undo monuments, which I believe is an illegal action.
I want to talk about the budget for a minute. You sit on the Appropriations Committee and specifically the Interior Subcommittee. So obviously you're in a pretty powerful role when it comes to funding the Interior Department. What's your take on what Secretary Zinke requested in the 2019 budget?
Well, Secretary Zinke proposed a 16% budget cut and changes in mandatory programs across the department. This is totally inadequate, and I expect our subcommittee and Congress to reject these cuts. But one thing I want to talk about is the proposal contained in the budget request to reorganize the Department of Interior. The budget proposal includes $18 million for the first phase of the DOI reorganization. The administration can't unilaterally decide it will significantly change how it delivers services to the public and spends taxpayer resources without seeking input from Congress and especially from the public. And in this case, Interior must consult with the tribes. As you probably know, there was an extensive consultative process involving the Deepwater Horizon disaster. It took 11 months. There was a commission that looked at this. And then, only then, with working with Congress, it was a plan put in place to reform the Minerals Management Service. We're not operating like that with this reorganization. So far, I've had two conversations with Secretary Zinke and my staff, and we've received a briefing a couple of weeks ago, but we still don't understand why such widespread changes are necessary or what they actually plan to propose. They've done nothing to assure me that this reorganization plan is necessary or anything other than an attempt to consolidate political power or shut out career scientists and administrators who have years of experience. Making decisions that affect the management of services for Indian country without consultation is an affront to tribal sovereignty. I have a long list of questions for Secretary Zinke, and we will be insisting on a full justification.
So, I mean, give me your read on what's going on here. You're having meetings with him. They're sending over memos that appear to be lacking in detail or substance that would even lead you to something that would be a bill you could vote on. So, I mean, are they just playing political games? Is this just incompetence by his staff who want to look like they're doing something but can't actually put a proposal together? What's your read on what's going on?
Well, first of all, it's been very hard in a public process, which is where this should be going on in front of congressional committees, to find out what they're doing. One of the things that happened with this reorganization proposal is a number of Western state governors, other public interest groups have weighed in and have uniformly said this is a bad idea. As a result of that, just several days ago, they put out a new reorganization map. And we just barely were trying to get our heads around the first one. Now we've got the second one. This is a very chaotic process. And I hope that he will come up here to the Hill in a public way and explain this to everybody and try to get to what you're asking about. What are the motivations? Why are you doing this? And how does this fit in with the history of the Interior Department and the goals of the department to protect our public lands and to protect tribal sovereignty?
How about the Land and Water Conservation Fund? The Secretary had pledged his support for it in a very straightforward fashion during his confirmation hearings, but now this budget has LWCF inexplicably in the red, somehow owing money back to the government. Do you think LWCF will make it into a funding bill this year? And if so, in what form or for what length of time?
Sure. Well, as you know, the Trump budget zeroed out the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which is unacceptable and very unfortunate. Just to give you an example of how those dollars are used, for every $1, we leverage $4 out there in the private sector. So this is a program that works. It makes a difference for the American people. We're going to fight tooth and nail to make sure that we get land and water conservation funding. That is what has happened in the past. There has usually been bipartisan restoration of the Land and Water Conservation Fund. Democrats and Republicans have joined together. My goal is the full funding of the Land and Water Conservation Fund.
I want to take a step back. When you were a teenager, your father, Stuart Udall, was the Interior Secretary under Presidents Kennedy and Johnson. What did you learn watching him in the job?
Well, one of the things I learned is that after spending time at Interior, I mean, early on he wrote a book to try to really get his head around what the history was of Interior, and the book came out very early in his tenure at the Department of Interior, and it was clear to me one of his central things that he motivated himself throughout his service there at the Department of Interior was listening to the career people and the scientists. I mean, they have an incredible staff at the Department of Interior. Many people have been there for a number of years. They work in specific areas where they become real experts. And so if you run into a situation where there's a problem or a challenge, you go to the career people and listen to their recommendations. Doesn't mean you always need to go with them, but it's the best place to start. And my father used to call the career people Interior the real treasures of the Department of Interior. And I think his recommendation would always be to listen to them and to try to consult with them in every way possible.
So given all of that, and given what we've seen both from the senior executive service reassignments, we've seen USGS scientists resign in protest after Secretary Zinke apparently wanted to see some reports before they were made public, which is very unusual. Do you think that there are some additional protections for career staff that are going to be necessary because of the secretary's tenure?
Well, one of the things we need is to get answers to our questions of why this was done. And that's why we will be focusing in on that when the secretary appears up here. There are a number of questions we've asked for him and his staff to answer that they haven't answered. And so a lot of this is not going to really play out until we get him up here and we get an answer to those questions. But it's clear to me, looking at what has happened so far, that it's not a very efficient or effective way to run government when you take someone who has been very familiar in one area and move them to a completely different area where they don't have very much experience. It would be like in the private sector taking your accountant or bookkeeper and moving them over into a very different policy area. And then moving somebody into accounting and bookkeeping that doesn't even know how to do the job. And so he's got some real questions to answer here.
What's the time frame for that or the process involved in getting him back on the Hill to testify?
Well, he'll be up here both in the appropriations context and also in the authorizing committee that makes big changes to the law here in the spring. The president's budget, as you know, comes out in February, and so usually then the way the appropriations process unfolds is in March, April, and May, the secretaries appear to defend their budget. In many cases, they can't defend the budget, which we've pointed out a couple of areas here, like the Land and Water Conservation Fund, where I think he's going to have a very hard time coming up against Republican and Democratic members of Congress who know that this is a popular program and know that the public supports it.
Before we go, I always like to ask elected officials to share something personal about their home state. So what is your perfect New Mexico road trip? If you've got 3 days, 4 days, long weekend off to yourself, where do you go?
Well, the thing that I love to do if I really have that kind of time is to get out into our beautiful public lands, our wilderness areas, in particular the Gila down in southern New Mexico and the Aldo Leopold Wilderness. That's one of my special places. Also up in the Sangre de Cristos, up more in the north, the Pecos Wilderness. So I would urge folks to get out of your car and get out onto the land. That's the way to really see some of the special places in New Mexico.
Any favorite secret spots that you don't want anyone except for the listeners of this podcast to know about?
Well, one of the things that I always urge people to do, too, is get out on our streams and rivers. When you mention secret spots, usually people like to share special fishing spots, but not the most special place. And I would just say one of my very special places is the Valles Caldera National Park, fishing on the Valles Caldera National Park. That's our newest national park in New Mexico. It's very special, and I would urge folks to get out there.
Wonderful. Senator Tom Udall, thanks so much for taking the time today. Thanks so much for all of your work keeping Secretary Zinke and the Interior Department accountable. And I hope we'll have you back soon, maybe after these hearings, and we'll get a debrief after the Secretary makes an appearance.
That sounds great, Aaron. Thank you so much.
One final note about the Greater Chaco area, which we talked about there. Our next episode is going to be entirely about Chaco. We've got a conversation with an archaeologist and the National Parks Conservation Association about the region, so look for that in your feed next Monday. The lease sale in Chaco is scheduled for a week from Thursday, March 8th. We like to close with a look back at this week in Western history. It was 75 years ago this week when more than 70 people died in the worst mine disaster in Montana history. February 27th, 1943 was a Saturday, which meant time and a half pay for the miners. They were working 7,000 feet underground at the Smith Mine near Bear Creek, keeping the war effort running. An hour and a half into their shift, almost all the miners were dead from an explosion that was so deep it wasn't heard at the mouth of the mine, but it was so powerful it knocked a 20-ton locomotive off its tracks a quarter mile away. The cause was a buildup of methane inside the mine, but investigators don't know what triggered the explosion. We do know that the miners were allowed to smoke and that blasting fuses were lit with matches. Of the 77 miners working that day, 30 of them were killed instantly by the explosion. Another 44 died either from suffocation or injuries. As one group tried to wall themselves off from the poisonous gas that was spreading through the mine, miner Emil Anderson grabbed chalk and wrote on a powder box, "It's 5 minutes past 11 o'clock. Dear Agnes and children, I'm sorry we had to go this way. God bless you all." A massive rescue effort followed. A special squad from the copper mines in Butte flew into town. In one tunnel, they found several bodies with no signs of injury. They were all sitting down, a son resting his head in his father's lap. By Monday, over 100 rescuers had been overcome by fumes and taken to the hospital. One of them died, bringing the total death toll to 75. In the end, only 3 people survived the Smith Mine disaster. Almost all the miners were immigrants or sons of immigrants. They left behind 58 widows and 176 children. A note found near 2 miners read, "Goodbye, wives and daughters. We died an easy death. Love from us both. Be good." The Smith Mine reopened in June, but it only lasted another 10 years. The town of Bear Creek never recovered. Today, only 100 people or so live in Bear Creek, Montana. But if you drive through, you can find a memorial to the Smith Mine disaster. It happened 75 years ago this week in Western history. That's it for this episode of Go West Young Podcast. We always love hearing from you. Send your feedback to podcast@westernpriorities.org. If you haven't yet, please go leave us a review on iTunes. That's the best way for new listeners to find us. Thanks again to our guest this week, New Mexico Senator Tom Udall. And on behalf of all of us at the Center for Western Priorities, thanks for listening.